WSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
And it's just about 6 o'clock, which means it's time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Sorry for the slight delay. There's just so much going on. And oh boy. Oh, this is just so much fun. I'm having the time of my life. I really mean this. A crippling transit strike has hit New York City, and their repercussions can be felt all the way out here on Long Island. In fact, it's the top story in national news. When something happens in New York, everybody pays attention. It's incredible. And, you know, as usual, everyone's going completely nuts. They're going crazy over this thing. it's not like we didn't have enough time to prepare for it. We all knew this was going to happen. Nobody can act surprised. Everybody knew the transit strike was going to happen at some point. I wish it had happened last week. You know, when I was actually there to witness it. That would have been more fun, but they had to postpone it. I guess to work out people's schedules and things like that. But it's happening now. And after this program, I intend to head into the city and see just what's happening. It's going to be interesting, though, because there are all these restrictions in place now, you know, just to cause more panic and mayhem. For instance, just now, right before I got here, I heard on the radio that they had closed Penn Station. I mean, Penn Station, obviously, is where everybody is coming home from. Everybody who's been to the city today and worked their little jobs and are now on their way home so they can, you know, bitch and moan some more and do the whole thing again tomorrow. All right, the commuter trains are not on strike, so people are hopping on the Long Island Railroad, except so many people apparently have the exact same schedules that Penn Station has become so crowded, it's a hazard right now, and they had to close it. They had to close the entrances because there were just too many people inside Penn Station. It's unbelievable. I wish I was there to witness this. People are waiting outside for over 2 hours to get into Penn Station. Imagine that, waiting 2 hours, and all you get is being inside Penn Station after all that. My God. I mean, if you're going to wait outside for 2 hours in the freezing cold, you should get something better than Penn Station at the end. But that's what's happening. And, you know, it's conformity rearing its ugly head yet again. If everybody didn't have the exact same schedule, everybody didn't have to be in work at 9 o'clock and out by 5, this wouldn't happen. You know, if some people went to work at, say, noon and left at, say, 4, all right, fine, 6. You know, we'd be happier, we'd be better off. We wouldn't all be in Penn Station at the same time. Just, you know, a little imagination, and particularly when something like this happens. Maybe you change the schedules around a little bit. There's been enough time to plan it out. And, you know, holidays coming up, people can be a little bit lax with the strictness of the schedule. There are ways of figuring this out. There are ways of getting through it. And as far as getting around, you know, New York City, actually, even when it's on strike, it still has better mass transit than most other cities. I kid you not. Do you know there is a, I'm going to look this up right now, in fact, there is a bus line that is not on strike in New York City. It's called the Command Bus Line. What is that on Google's webpage? There's some kind of hideous graphic on Google's webpage that I don't understand. Where it says Google is just a big splotch. Maybe it's our browser. I don't know. But there's this private bus company called Command Bus, and they serve southeastern Brooklyn, and they go into Manhattan. And from what I've heard, and I heard this on one of those other radio stations, they are not on strike, and people have seen their buses going back and forth as usual. Commandbus.com is their website, so if you're in that area, maybe you want to look into that. But in addition, you know, there's another subway in New York City. Yeah, it's called the PATH train. And the PATH train mostly goes back and forth from New Jersey, but it also goes up and down the west side of Manhattan, starting at around 34th Street, going all the way down to Christopher Street, and actually technically going all the way down to the World Trade Center site, except to connect to there, you sort of have to go by way of Jersey City. Not a big deal, really. You know, let's say you're at World Trade Center and you want to get to Penn Station. You simply hop on a PATH train, it goes to Jersey City or Hoboken or something like that, and then comes back at 34th Street. It's miraculous. And this is with a transit strike. You know, this is better mass transit than Detroit has. It really is. So there are ways of getting around. You know, you could walk. Yeah, think about it. Think about walking. How hard is that really? Yeah, it's cold outside. We all know it's cold outside. But you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to be walking completely. All throughout the city. No cars, no cabs. None of those stupid pedaling taxi things that they have now. No horses. No jumping on other people's backs and making them carry you. None of that. Just walking. It's good for you, and it feels good, too. Yeah, it takes a little longer, but, you know, when you're walking, you can do things like think. I know that's scary, especially when we look at the things in the world today to think about, but maybe it'll lead to some interesting conclusions, some courses of action, a better life for us all. Or you could use a bicycle. A little dangerous because it's slippery, but, you know, people have been getting around on bicycles for millennia, so you can do it too. Rollerblades, roller skates, pogo sticks. I don't know. There are all kinds of things you can do. I'm just sick of hearing all the complaining. It's like, you know, when a little bit of snow comes into the area, everything gets paralyzed. Not because of the snow, because of the anticipation of the snow. People drive down to the local supermarket in their big Jeeps and load up as if it's the coming of the apocalypse or something, when it's about an inch or two of snow that's forecast. You know, we must have supplies. We must get through this. Come on. Try living in a war-torn city or something like that. A nation that's being destroyed. I'm not referring to any particular nation. Take your choice. But it's an inconvenience. It's a relatively minor inconvenience if you put it in perspective with everything else going on in the world. And it's something I think we can easily... I think most people get this. I think most people understand that they can get through this. Remember the blackout a few years ago? People just got around things. They walked across the bridge. They got back and forth where they had to go. Other people took care of other people. You know, that's what we all have to do. And, you know, let's keep in mind what's going on here, what this is all about. It's quite an epic battle that's happening between the Transit Workers Union and the MTA. There's all kinds of silly things that they're arguing about, but there's also very important issues. I don't think nearly enough attention is being focused on them. Things like the increasing automation, taking people out of subway cars and subway stations, replacing them with machines, which is a monumentally bad idea for the nation's largest transit system to not have a whole lot of staff people around. You know, people are irreplaceable, and the MTA seems to be wanting to do this more and more. That's what I consider to be the real issue. But there are countless others. And if you just look at the negotiations as they've been going along, you'll see some of them. One thing I don't understand, they're negotiating the rights of future employees. In fact, they even call them the unborn employees. You know, saying that they are going to have to pay a significant percentage for health care, whereas health care has always been provided in the past. Now, how is it? How do you manage to bargain away rights of people who aren't even employed yet? I don't even know why that's an issue. That should be something that comes up when those people are the ones driving the trains and buses. But somehow the TWU is being asked, in, I guess, less polite terms, to give away the rights of future employees. You know, I mean, if I was bargaining, I would say, you know, that's for the future. We're just going to deal with the present, nothing else. It's not up to us to sign off on something 20 years down the road. We can only have a contract for the next however many years. But they've been caught up in that. I think that's one of the biggest issues, in fact. And what's this? We have late news. The Brooklyn judge today imposed... Oh, this is precious. Imposed a $1 million a day fine against the Transit Workers Union, Local 100, for striking New York City's transit system. State Supreme Court Justice Theodore Jones leveled the sanction against the Transport Workers Union for violating state law by going on strike. You know, this Taylor Law, I do not see how something like that could ever have been put into place. Denying people the right to strike. Yeah, okay, it's an essential service. Lots of things are essential services. But one of the most essential things of all is a fair wage, a fair contract. And obviously, if you don't have the right to go on strike, you're going to get taken advantage of. I love hearing Bloomberg talking about how, you know, teachers didn't go on strike. They didn't have a contract for years. And they didn't go on strike. And you know what? They got screwed. You get attention when you go on strike. You get people to talk. And some might consider that to be... I've heard the word terrorism used. I hear that word used in just about everything. You stole my shopping cart! That's terrorism! Everything these days is being compared to terrorism. But the TWU walking out, yeah, that's also terrorism, apparently. Because they're intimidating New Yorkers and forcing them to do something they don't want to do. But what do you consider it when you're an employee of a huge organization and the city is talking about fining you $25,000 a day as an individual? This is not just the union. This is an individual who has no choice. What can the individual possibly do? These individual workers, they're expected to, hop on a train and start driving it on their own? Of course, every individual who's part of the union, which is a requirement of the job, is on strike when the union says so. So how in God's name do you justify fining the individual people? Yet the city is doing this, and they're going crazy. $25,000, and that fine will be doubled every day. I mean, okay, you might as well wish for a quadrillion dollars then, you know? Double infinity, whatever. They've lost their minds. And meanwhile, those poor saps, who I was very close to being one of, who were arrested during the Republican convention and held for longer than the amount of time mandated by the court order, I missed it by, I think, 15 minutes or something, those people are getting checks for $250 each. Yeah, that's all the city got fined. It's a significant amount, and it does send a powerful statement, no question about that. But, come on. If they played by the same rules, we'd be getting $1 million each. And you know what? Double that. For every minute you're late. It's fantasy land. Someone needs to give them a good smack across the face, and I think that's what's happening here. So, you know, think about that when you're inconvenienced a little bit. It's a bigger issue. You know, nobody wants to do this, but sometimes you have to speak louder to get something that's fair. And it just hasn't seemed fair for what I've been seeing. You know, the head of the MTA didn't even enter the negotiations until 1 hour before the deadline. You know, that's just disrespectful right there. And their offers have been piddling at best. Meanwhile, you've got an organization that has a surplus. What is it, a $1 billion surplus? They're squandering it by basically coming up with these fair incentives that they don't need to do. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter to me that it was $1 to ride the subway on weekends instead of $2. I could have lived without that if it meant paying people a better wage, if it meant keeping somebody in a token booth, or keeping a conductor on a train. Those things are more important than a temporary savings. But the mere fact that an organization like this has a $1 billion surplus, and they're screaming poverty. They're saying, well, in a few years, we're going to have a deficit. Okay, but right now you have a surplus. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that, you know, that means you have money, and you can do something with it, something positive, something long-lasting. I mean, invest in the infrastructure, if nothing else. You've got that Second Avenue subway they've been trying to build for about 400 years. There are just so many things. You know, also, maybe it's just a good idea to say, okay, you know, union leadership, you're now in charge of the MTA. You run it. I'm sure they don't want to, but might be a good idea. Anyway, so yeah, $1 million fine a day to the union. And where does this money go exactly? You know, if they do collect $1 million a day from the union, I don't think it's going to go to the people who are walking around and filling up Penn Station. It's probably going to go right into the city. And then what? What happens? I mean, they're making a good profit off of this, aren't they? And they're not paying the workers. Oh, a strike is the best thing ever for the government of New York, isn't it? Unless that $1 million somehow gets floated down to the people. I don't think it's going to happen if they ever manage to collect it in the first place. So yeah, the Taylor Law, I don't have much respect for that, and I can understand why other people don't as well. You know, I see things happening in other countries. In the French populace has a strike every few weeks in Italy and England, and they get around it, they get by. Most importantly, though, the people who are working have some power to make a statement when they're not happy, rather than having to bottle it all up and, you know, explode years later. So, let's see what else we have on the transit strike here. Attorneys for the city and state had asked Judge Jones to hit the union with a very potent fine for ignoring the Taylor Law. This story from the Associated Press, it isn't about money or pensions for Angel Ortiz. It's about the angry passenger rants and abusive bosses who rack up discipline slips and are stingy about sick days. These are the things you don't even hear about. Charles Kraft, who works on the tracks of the L subway line in Brooklyn, said it's grueling to work in the subways. Kraft, an MTA employee for 18 years, said some bosses treat his colleagues like animals. The Transit Workers Union early today rejected a sweetened MTA offer, raising salaries 10.5% over 3 years. The TWU's International Union said it had advised Local 100 not to strike, but they did anyway. So we'll be following this story. My only regret is that I'm not going to be here very much longer. I'm going to be in Germany next week. In fact, it should be an interesting show. We'll be coming from someplace. The next two shows, actually, will be coming from someplace else. But, you know, the strike is happening now. We can have as much fun as possible in the time that we have. Last strike was in 1980. I think it lasted, what, 11 days or something? Newsday is reporting disaster for Long Island commuters in wake of strike. Disaster! Oh my God! Commuters faced large crowds, long delays, and general chaos as they tried to get into New York City. No talks between the union and the MTA are scheduled, incidentally. Long Island Railroad is operating with all sorts of delays, but then, you know, that's kind of normal, isn't it? At Penn Station, some commuters lined up for cabs outside Penn Station and gathered in clusters on designated spots throughout the city for company vans and buses to shuttle them to their offices. Nope, that's pretty much everything there is to say on the subject. But these fines are really hilarious. Just watching them mount up. I don't know where they're, where they think they're actually going to go from there. Okay, so that's what's been happening. We'll keep you updated if anything breaks during this hour, but in the meantime, especially if you're in another part of the world, keep an eye on this story because it's fascinating. Okay, but the real story of the week, in my opinion, is the scandal coming out of, the latest scandal that is coming out of Washington. I'm sure you've heard about this. I was afraid this story wasn't going to catch but it has. New York Times last week reporting that President Bush authorized the warrantless tapping of telephones and the reading of email of American citizens inside the United States. Yeah, I'll say it again. Warrantless tapping of phones, reading of email of U.S. citizens inside the United States. President Bush authorized this back in 2002. Now, if you watched this unfold, you would have seen him dancing around the issue, you know, talking about the Iraqi elections and everything else that he could possibly divert attention to. And then, I think it was sometime over the weekend, he suddenly bounced back. I think it was on a Saturday radio address, which for some reason was on television. I said, yeah, I did this. I had every right to do this. We're safer for it. Are you dead? No, you're not dead. You're alive. It's because of this. Haha, so there. Anybody who criticizes this is an enemy of the state. It must be destroyed. It's pretty much what he said. Now, Bush took aim at the New York Times, saying that they jeopardized national security by revealing that he authorized the wiretaps on U.S. citizens. The president also said his actions were permissible, but that leaking the revelation to the media was illegal. Here we go again with the legalities. Maybe they should be fined $1 million a day. Double it. During an unusual live on-camera version of his weekly radio address, Bush said such authorization is fully consistent with his constitutional responsibilities and authorities. Yeah, I've been looking for the bump on his head because he must have hit it pretty hard to come up with a statement like that. My God, consistent with his constitutional responsibilities and authorities. What constitution is he reading? He added, yesterday the existence of the secret program was revealed in media reports after being improperly provided to news organizations. As a result, our enemies have learned information they should not have. And the unauthorized disclosure of this effort damages our national security and puts our citizens at risk. Yeah, I'll tell you what, our citizens are very much at risk, but they're at risk because of things like this. I mean, my God, the fact that you can just sidestep process and spy on anybody you like. It's not as if, you know, it's not easy to get a warrant in the first place. It's ridiculously easy. They have secret courts. That's bad enough. There's this thing called FISA. It's the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act. And according to Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, the authority is already there, the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act. They can ask for a warrant, and even if there's an emergency situation, they can go for 72 hours as long as they give notice at the end of 72 hours. They can do all this. But, you know, the problem with that is that there is some accountability. There is some process. And apparently that is the problem. That's something that needs to be sidestepped. Now, the real problem that I see is that the New York Times knew about this. They knew about this for a year. And they, at the request of the administration, didn't report it. And in fact, there are more aspects to the story that they're still not reporting because the administration doesn't want them to reveal them. That, to me, is a real scandal. Not quite as big as the Bush scandal, the latest Bush scandal, but it's pretty big. Here's a statement from New York Times executive editor Bill Keller. We We start with the premise that a newspaper's job is to publish information that is a matter of public interest. Clearly, a secret policy reversal that gives an American intelligence agency discretion to monitor communications within the country is a matter of public interest. From the outset, the question was not why we would publish it, but why we would not. A year ago, when this information first became known to Times reporters, the administration argued strongly that writing about this eavesdropping program would give terrorists clues about the vulnerability of their communications and would deprive the government of an effective tool for the protection of the country's security. Officials also assured senior editors of the Times that a variety of legal checks had been imposed that satisfied everyone involved that the program raised no legal questions. As we have done before in rare instances, when faced with a convincing national security argument, we agreed not to publish at that time. My God. I mean, once you go down that road, it's just it's such a bad precedent. You can look at any story in any newspaper and say, you know, publishing that hurts nice people someplace. So we'd be happy if you didn't publish that. It's not the concern of the media to do the administration's job. The administration is doing a good job. They don't have to worry about what a free press is able to uncover. If, however, they're embroiled in all kinds of cover-ups and scandals, yeah, they want the media to keep quiet. They want to be able to tell them, don't publish this. But in a truly open society, that should not be an issue. Anyway, let's continue with this statement from New York Times executive editor. We also continued reporting, and in the ensuing months, two things happened that changed our thinking. First, we developed a fuller picture of the concerns and misgivings that had been expressed during the life of the program. I'm not quite sure what that means. It is not our place to pass judgment on the legal or civil liberties questions involved in such a program, but it became clear those questions loomed larger within the government than we had previously understood. Sure would like to have some specifics on that. Loomed larger within the government. Second, in the course of subsequent reporting, we satisfied ourselves that we could write about this program, withholding a number of technical details, in a way that would not expose any intelligence gathering methods or capabilities that are not already on the public record. Now, I can't imagine what kind of technical details those would be. I mean, I don't think anybody is seriously revealing telephone numbers of people who are being tapped or something like that. I don't think that information, if that information is out there, then it should be revealed. But I don't think it is. So what kind of technical information would be harmful to reveal at this point? We know that phones are being tapped. We know that email is being read. What else could possibly be left? What the name of the program they use on their computers? I mean, I'm dying of curiosity here. I'd like to know what the specifics are. The more they don't report them, the more I want to know. And I think that's what any journalist would be feeling right now. Continuing here, the fact that the government eavesdrops on those suspected of terrorist connections is well known. The fact that the NSA can legally monitor communications within the United States with a warrant from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court is also public information. What is new is that the NSA has, for the past 3 years, had the authority to eavesdrop on Americans and others inside the United States without a warrant. I'm going to read that again because that's just a good statement. What is new is that the NSA has, for the past 3 years, had the authority to eavesdrop on Americans and others inside the United States without a warrant. It is that expansion of authority, not the need for a robust anti-terror intelligence operation, that prompted debate within the government, and that is the subject of the article. And something else, too, that deserves some attention in all this. These are statements by our esteemed leader, George W. Bush on April 20th, 2004. This was a selection from a talk on information sharing and how the Patriot Act is vital to homeland security. And this was at Kleinshan Music Hall in Buffalo, New York. So this was about a year and a half ago. Keep in mind, this is the guy who authorized the NSA to spy on American citizens without warrants. And here he is addressing concerns about exactly that sort of thing a year and a half ago. Take a listen.
Secondly, there are such things as roving wiretaps. Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so. It's important for our fellow citizens to understand, when you think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place when it comes to doing what is necessary to protect our homeland, because we value the Constitution.
Oh my God, did you hear that? A direct, complete lie. Yeah, whenever we're tapping people, we follow due process. Nothing to worry about. I mean, how much more blatant can you possibly get? Seriously, people, I mean, it's like, you know, Mother Nature is coming forth here to every week give us something a little bit more damning and just to see what our reaction is going to be. This, I mean, you have a guy basically saying one thing and doing something completely different and then saying, yeah, well, you know, what I did that was completely different is completely in line with what I said before, which is the exact opposite. I'd like to play that again, except this time with a little theme music.
Secondly, there are such things as roving wiretaps. Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so. It's important for our fellow citizens to understand, when you think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place when it comes to doing what is necessary to protect our homeland, because we value the Constitution.
Oh, you are a liar. There's no question about it. And, you know, even people from conservative backgrounds are saying the same thing now. It's kind of heartening to see that, actually. It's one of the few times I can say there's really no difference between Democrats and Republicans, and it's a good thing. So there will be hearings, there will be investigations, but, you know, there has to be more. There has to be a lot more than that. I mean, look what happened to Clinton over lying about sex. You know, this is lying over something so much more important. And it's not the first time. There have been lies about everything from investigating people, spying on people, to going to war. And just so much more. It's so corrupt, so depressing. But the only thing that can cheer us all up is justice. And I think justice is on the way because more and more people are just speaking up about this sort of thing, you know? And I think if you ask around, most people are really kind of worried right now. This is very uneasy. It's sort of like this guy really has lost it. And we have, and I don't use the term lightly, I really don't. But this has all the earmarkings of dictatorship. Now, not to minimize the dictatorships of the past, because there are truly some impressive dictatorships of the past, you know, Mussolini and Hitler and Franco and, you know, all those people, all the Central American and South American and Asian and European and all those people, they really did one heck of a job with being dictators. Now, this guy can barely open a can of fruit, all right? So to say that he's going to be a good dictator, by good I mean a competent dictator, is a bit of a stretch. But inside that brain of his are the same yearnings that a dictator would have. He has no way of actually achieving them, but that is what he is attempting to do. He's attempting to bypass the laws, bypass everything that our country has been founded on to get his way. And that, my friends, is a danger, because once you start doing that, it's very hard to undo it. It's very hard to stop doing it in the future. And, you know, just going back in the past a little bit can verify this. Look at the early years of this administration, when there were hints of doing something in Iraq and people were outraged. The opening moments of the invasion, how shocked we were to see American troops actually in Baghdad. And now, you know, no big deal. Doesn't matter. You know, a single casualty would have been a headline. 10 troops could have died today. Nobody cares. No one's talking about it. Just routine. So the things that were unheard of, the things that were completely alien to us only a couple of years ago are now just accepted. Many years ago, the simple name of Homeland Security would have been enough to evoke laughter from most people, because it just sounds so simplistic and stupid. And now, you know, we all accept it. Department of Homeland Security. I even say it without laughing these days. We talk about the color code as if that's some sort of a gospel. So, yeah, you know, we can change. We change very subtly, very small ways, but we wind up being changed significantly. And it's through steps like this. So yeah, there's a real danger here. And like any dictator, competent or incompetent, everybody knows in the back of their minds the guy's got to go. You know, it's what they said about Caesar, and boy, that's one comparison I really don't want to make. They said it about Napoleon. That's another one I really don't want to make. But, you know, everybody who has led a country, led a people, and had the power go to his head, everybody is muttering in the corridors, you know, we got to get rid of this guy somehow, because he's a real problem. And that has started. It's been going on for some time, but it's really starting now. I'm hearing it from people that, you know, consider themselves to be conservative. But the real question is, okay, so, you know, you get rid of this guy, what do you replace him with? You know, anybody in the administration right now has been tainted by all of this nonsense. And in fact, I would say most people in leadership roles in this country have been tainted by this nonsense. We need to rethink what it is we stand for. And that, unfortunately, is going to be the difficult part of this whole thing. Getting somebody out of that position of power is relatively easy compared to what do you do then? How do you fix it all? So yeah, we're facing some very crazy times, and they just seem to get crazier. It makes the transit strike look normal, doesn't it? We see all kinds of horrors every day, and we just kind of, like, you know, say, well, that's the way things are. We live in a changed world. We're at war. All these nonsensical statements that somehow justify what it is that we're doing. And yeah, I am going to say we, because as long as we tolerate it, we might as well be doing it. Let's take a look at a couple of examples of what I'm talking about. A human rights group said on Sunday that the United States operated a secret prison for terrorism suspects as recently as last year in Afghanistan, where detainees were tortured and mistreated in other ways. Now, imagine that story breaking 5 years ago. It wouldn't be, you know, on page A4 or something of the Times. It would be screaming headlines every place, because that kind of a thing would not have been even imagined. We stood for something much better than that. But now, you know, well, Afghanistan this week. Well, last week, wasn't it Romania? And Abu Ghraib, you know, all these things happen. It's necessary. Torture, you got to do that sometimes. What are we turning into? The Bush administration has faced international criticism over detainees after a November 2nd Washington Post article said the CIA held dozens of terrorism suspects in secret prisons called black sites in countries all around the world, including Eastern Europe. Human Rights Watch said 8 detainees now held in the U.S. military facility at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Another thing we, which would have shocked us years ago, having a prison on Cuba, where people are tortured and held without charge. What's up with that? 8 detainees there have told their attorneys that they were arrested separately in countries in Asia and the Middle East and flown to Afghanistan at various times between 2002 and 2004. They were taken to a prison near Kabul where they were shackled to walls, kept in darkness for weeks, deprived of food and water for days at a time, bombarded with loud rap and heavy metal music. It's the torture of the day, I suppose. Not the music, the method. And punched and slapped during questioning by U.S. interrogators. The prison may have been operated by personnel from the Central Intelligence Agency, the New York-based group said in a report released on Sunday. It said the facility, which detainees called the Dark Prison, may have been closed after several prisoners were transferred to a main military detention site outside Bagram in late 2004. Then, you may have seen this. In fact, I can't find the actual video. I saw the video once, and it seems to have vanished off the website that it was on originally. That website, I've got the name of the website someplace. I'll track it down. But basically, it's a video of a silver Mercedes that swings into a passing lane, and then a machine gun opens fire, sending the car smashing into a taxi, and the terrified occupants of the taxi scatter. Moments later on the video, which has been posted on the internet and apparently recorded in Iraq, we see a white sedan riddled with bullets as it accelerates on the open highway. This is some kind of really sick video that has been made apparently by some independent contractors or government contractors. I'm not quite sure what the right term is. And it's done to the tune of Elvis Presley's Mystery Train. I don't know exactly why, but for some reason, whoever recorded this tape felt that was the appropriate music to play. And so you have this video where you see people driving down a highway being shot at, and many of them apparently dying as they crash into walls and other cars, and it's really insane. You see cars just kind of swerving out of control, coming to a stop, and then no sign of life. It's really sobering, but that unfortunately is the world that we live in today. And unfortunately, I don't have that site. I must have left it someplace else. But if anybody knows where that video is, I will report it on the radio, and you can all take a look at it yourself. If you go to various news sites, you'll see excerpts of it, but then you have people talking over it and explaining what it is you're seeing, rather than letting you see the video for yourself, and I think that's important. Details about the origin of the video clip and the location shown in it are unknown. It was originally posted on a website maintained by former employees of Aegis Specialist Risk Management. That's spelled A-E-G-I-S. It's a London-based company and has a $293 million U.S. government contract to provide security services in Iraq. And the video has since been removed from their site. There are more than 25,000 private security contractors working in Iraq. The military employs private contractors to handle jobs that would otherwise be performed by troops. But what happens many times is that untrained people do horrible things. In fact, trained people do horrible things too, but some of the things that we've been seeing recently have been completely disgusting. And continuing along our words of cheer in our pre-holiday show here. And yeah, you know, we can say holiday, can't we? All of a sudden, the right wing is going crazy over the fact that people say happy holidays. Ever since I was born, people have been saying happy holidays, but apparently now the religious right takes offense at that statement and says that we're not acknowledging Christmas. Well, you know what? I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it. It's next Sunday. In fact, a lot of churches are closed for some reason. That's a whole other story. Church is closed on Sunday. Listen to this. Counterterrorism agents at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So we've talked about the CIA. We've talked about the NSA. Now we're going to talk about the FBI. They have conducted numerous surveillance and intelligence gathering operations that involved, at least indirectly, groups active in causes as diverse as the environment, animal cruelty, or I imagine the prevention of animal cruelty, and poverty relief, according to newly disclosed agency records. This was reported today in the New York Times. FBI officials said yesterday that their investigators had no interest in monitoring political or social activities, and that any investigations that touched on advocacy groups were driven by evidence of criminal or violent activity at public protests and in other settings. After the September 11th attacks, John Ashcroft, then Attorney General, loosened restrictions on the FBI's investigative powers, giving the Bureau greater ability to visit and monitor websites. You need an ability to visit a website? Come on, guys. As well as mosques and other public entities so that they could develop terrorism leads. The Bureau has used that authority to investigate not only groups with suspected ties to foreign terrorists, but also protest groups suspected of having links to violent or disruptive activities. The interesting thing about links is that everybody has links to everybody else. And I've witnessed this firsthand, where people are being investigated because they may know somebody who did something bad. One FBI document, listen to this, indicates that agents in Indianapolis plan to conduct surveillance as part of a vegan community project. Vegan community project. Another document talks of the Catholic workers group, semi-communistic ideology. A third indicates the Bureau's interest in determining the location of a protest over llama fur planned by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. What kind of sickness is this? These are the people that are a threat to our way of life? No, I think, you know, the people in the three-letter organizations, you've become the threat. All right. I've had about enough. I've had about enough today, not just with this administration, so I'm going to put an end to this. But first, I'd like to leave you with a quote, or a question, actually. Guy I've learned to respect over the years. First, I didn't like him, met him a couple of times, and he's, you know, kind of salty, kind of speaks his mind, sometimes misses the point, but more times than not gets it. And that's 87-year-old Mike Wallace from CBS and 60 Minutes. And recently, he actually managed to answer a couple of questions. He was interviewed by, I believe, the Boston Globe. And the question in this interview, the first question actually, is this: President George W. Bush has declined to be interviewed by you. This might be the smartest thing he's ever done. What would you ask him if you had the chance? And listen to this answer. What in the world prepared you to be the commander-in-chief of the largest superpower in the world? In your background, Mr. President, you apparently were incurious. You didn't want to travel. You knew very little about the military. The governor of Texas doesn't have the kind of power that some governors have. Why do you think they nominated you? Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that the country is so expletive deleted up? Way to go, Mike. And with that, we're going to close it out for tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening, and those of you who continue to write in, otw@2600.com is our email address. Please write to us. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back next week with a show from someplace overseas, I believe. It ought to be fun, so stay tuned. Good night.
Prophet reclined on the golden heights. Said this land is my land to the Shiites. Jehovah looked up from the Sea of Galilee beneath. He said, I see you, you thief. This land is my land, and this sand is my sand, and this band is my band. All the lonely boys looking over the shoulder. His armored van fell on his knees and kissed the land. He said something that I did not understand. It was in Polish. Then up stepped an aide. He said, I will translate. Here's what his holiness said. Carbons underneath. And the sea of battle rages round the ancient tombs, and Mother Nature licks her wounds. And the lonely boy is locked in their towers of faith, nervous in the park when the gates are closed. After